Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. Reading today from the story of John G. Peyton, the missionary to the South Sea Island Cannibals in islands formerly known as the New Hebrides, and now called the nation of Vanuatu. We're on chapter 67. It's called Rain from Below. At this depth, the earth and coral began to be soaked with damp. I felt that we were nearing water. My soul had a faith that God would open a spring for us. But side by side with this faith was a strange terror that the water would be salt. And so perplexing and mixed are even the highest experiences of the soul. The rose flower of a perfect faith set round and round with prickly thorns. One evening I said to the old chief, "I think that Jehovah God will give us water tomorrow from that hole." The chief said, "No, Missy, you will never see rain coming up from the earth on this island. We wonder what is to be the end of this mad work of yours. We expect daily, if you reach water, to see you drop through into the sea and the sharks will eat you, and that will be the end of it. Death to you and danger to us all." I still answered, "Come tomorrow. I hope and believe that Jehovah God will send you the rain right up through the earth." At the moment, I knew I was risking much and probably incurring sorrowful consequences had no water been given. But I had faith that the Lord was leading me on, and I knew that I sought His glory, not my own. Next morning, I went down again at daybreak and sank a narrow hole in the center, about 2 feet deep. The perspiration broke over me with uncontrollable excitement, and I trembled through every limb, when the water rushed up and began to fill the hole. Muddy though it was, I eagerly tasted it, lapping it with my trembling hand, and then I almost fell upon my knees in that muddy bottom as my heart burst up in praise to the Lord. It was water. It was fresh water. It was living water from Jehovah's well. True, it was a little brackish, but nothing to speak of, and no spring in the desert cooling the parched lips of a fevered pilgrim ever appeared more worthy of being called a well of God than did that water to me. The chiefs had assembled with their men nearby. They waited on in eager expectancy. It was a rehearsal in a small way of the Israelites coming round while Moses struck the rock and called for water. By and by, when I had praised the Lord and my excitement was a little calmed, the mud being also greatly settled, I filled a jug, which I had taken down empty in the sight of them all, and ascending to the top, called for them to come and see the rain which Jehovah God had given us through the well. They closed around me in haste and gazed on it in superstitious fear. The old chief shook it to see if it would spill, and then touched it to see if it felt like water. At last, he tasted it, and rolling it in his mouth with joy for a moment, he swallowed it and shouted, "Rain! Rain! Yes, it is rain! But how did you get it?" I repeated, "Jehovah my God gave it out of his own earth in answer to our labors and prayers. Go and see it springing up for yourselves." Now, though every man there could climb the highest tree as swiftly and as fearlessly as a squirrel or an opossum, not one of them had courage to walk to the side and gaze down into that well. To them, this was miraculous. But they were not without a resource that met the emergency. They agreed to take firm hold of each other by the hand, to place themselves in a long line, and the foremost man to lean cautiously forward, gaze into the well, and then pass to the rear, and so on, until all had seen Jehovah's rain far below. It was somewhat comical, and yet far more pathetic, to stand by and watch their faces as man after man peered down into the mystery and then looked up at me in blank bewilderment. When all had seen it with their own very eyes and were weak with wonder, the old chief exclaimed, "Missy, wonderful! Wonderful is the work of your Jehovah God. No god of Aniwa ever helped us in this way. The world is turned upside down since Jehovah came to Aniwa. But, Missy, he continued after a pause that looked like silent worship, will it always rain up through the earth, or will it come and go like the rain from the clouds? I told them that I believed it would always continue there for our use, as a good gift from Jehovah. Well, but Missy, replied the chief, some glimmering of self-interest beginning to strike his brain, will you or your family drink it all, or shall we also have some? Oh, you and all your people, I answered, and all the people of the island may come and drink and carry away as much of it as you wish. I believe there will always be plenty for us all, and the more of it we can use, the fresher it will be. That is the way with many of our Jehovah's best gifts to men, and for it and for all we praise his name. Then, Missy, said the chief, it will be our water, and we may all use it as our very own. Yes, I answered, whenever you wish it, and as much as you need, both here and at your own houses, as far as it can possibly be made to go. The chief looked at me eagerly, fully convinced at length that the well contained a treasure, and exclaimed, Missy, what can we do to help you now? I was thankful indeed to accept of the chief's assistance, now sorely needed, and I said, well, you have seen it fall in once already. If it falls again, it will conceal the rain from below which our God has given us. In order to preserve it for us and for our children in all time, we must build it round and round with great coral blocks from the bottom to the very top. I will now clear it out and prepare the foundation for this wall of coral. Let every man and woman carry from the shore the largest block they can bring. It is well worth all the toil thus to preserve our great Jehovah's gift. Scarcely were my words uttered when they rushed to the shore with shoutings and songs of gladness, and soon everyone was seen struggling under the biggest block of coral with which he dared to tackle. And they lay like limestone rocks, broken up by the hurricanes, and rolled ashore in the arms of mighty billows. And in an incredibly short time, scores of them were tumbled down for my use at the mouth of the well. Having prepared a foundation, I made ready a sort of bag basket into which every block was firmly tied, and then I let down to me by the pulley a native teacher, a faithful fellow, cautiously guiding it. I received and placed each stone in its position, doing my poor best to wedge them one against the other, building circularly and cutting them to the needed shape with my American axe. The wall is about 3 feet thick, and the masonry may be guaranteed to stand till the coral itself decays. I wrought incessantly for fear of any further collapse, till I had it raised about 20 feet, and now, feeling secure, and my hands being dreadfully cut up, I intimated that I would rest a week or two and finish the building then. But the chief advanced and said, Missy, you have been strong to work. Your strength has fled. But rest here beside us, and just point out where each block is to be laid. We will lay them there. We will build them solidly behind like you. And no man will sleep until it is done. With all their heart and will, they started on the job, some carrying, some cutting and squaring the blocks, till the wall rose like magic, and a row of the hugest rocks laid round the top, bound all together, and formed the mouth of the well. Women, boys, and all wished to have a hand in building it, and it remains to this day a solid wall of masonry, the circle being 34 feet deep, 8 feet wide at the top, and 6 at the bottom. I floored it over with wood above all, and fixed the windlass and bucket, and there it stands, as one of the greatest material blessings which the Lord has given to Aniwa. It rises and falls with the tide, though a third of a mile distant from the sea, and when, after using it, we tasted the pure fresh water on board the Dayspring, the latter seemed so insipid that I had to slip a little salt into my tea along with the sugar before I could enjoy it. All visitors are taken to see the well as one of the wonders of Aniwa, and an elder of the native church said to me on a recent visit, "Except for that water, during the last 2 years of drought, we would have all been dead." Very strangely, though, the natives themselves have since tried to sink 7 or 8 wells in the most likely places near their different villages. They have either come to coral rock, which they could not pierce, or found only water that was salt. And they say amongst themselves, "Missy not only used pick and spade, but he prayed and cried to his God. We have learned to dig, but not how to pray, and therefore Jehovah will not give us the rain from below." Chapter 68, The Old Chief's Sermon. The well was now finished. The place was neatly fenced in, and the old chief said, "Missy, I think I could help you next Sabbath. Will you let me preach a sermon on the well?" "Yes," I at once replied, "if you will try to bring all the people to hear you." "Missy, I will try," he eagerly promised. The news spread like wildfire that the chief, Namake, was to be missionary on the next day for the worship, and the people, under great expectancy, urged each other to come and hear what he had to say. Sabbath came around. Aniwa assembled in what was, for that island, a great crowd. Namake appeared, dressed in shirt and kilt. He was so excited and flourished his tomahawk about at such a rate that it was rather lively work to be near him. I conducted short opening devotions and then called upon Namake. He rose at once, with eye flashing wildly and his limbs twitching with emotion. He spoke to the following effect, swinging his tomahawk to enforce every eloquent gesticulation. "Friends of Namake, men and women, and children of Aniwa, listen to my words. Since Missy came here, he has talked many strange things we could not understand, things all too wonderful. And we said, regarding many of them, that they must be lies. White people might believe such nonsense, but we said that the black fellow knew better than to receive it. But of all his wonderful stories, we thought the strangest was about sinking down through the earth to get rain. And then we said to each other, the man's head is turned. He's gone mad. But the Missy prayed on and wrought on, telling us that Jehovah God heard and saw, and that his God would give him rain. Was he mad? Has he not got the rain deep down in the earth? We mocked at him, but the water was there all the same. We have laughed at other things which the Missy told us because we could not see them. But from this day I believe that all he tells us about his Jehovah God is true. Some day our eyes will see it, for today we have seen the rain from the earth." And then rising to a climax, first the one foot and then the other, making the broken coral on the floor fly behind like a war horse pawing the ground, he cried with great eloquence, "My people, the people of Aniwa, the world is turned upside down since the word of Jehovah came to this land. Whoever expected to see rain coming up through the earth, it has always come from the clouds. Wonderful is the work of this Jehovah God. No God of Aniwa ever answered prayers as the Missy's God has done. Friends of Namake, all the powers of the world could not have forced us to believe that rain could be given from the depths of the earth if we had not seen it with our eyes, felt it, and tasted it as we here do. And now, by the help of Jehovah God, the Missy brought that invisible rain to view which we never before heard of or saw, and then he was beating his hand on his breast, and he exclaimed, "Something here in my heart tells me that the Jehovah God does exist, the invisible one, whom we never heard of nor saw until the Missy brought him to our knowledge. The coral has been removed, the land has been cleared away, and lo, the water rises. invisible till this day, yet all the same as it was there, though our eyes were too weak. So I, your chief, do now firmly believe that when I die, when the bits of coral and the heaps of dust are removed, which now blind my old eyes, I shall then see the invisible Jehovah God with my soul, as Missy tells me, not less surely than I have seen the rain from the earth below. From this day, my people, I must worship the God who has opened for us the well, and who fills us with rain from below. The gods of Aniwa cannot hear, cannot help us, like the God of Missy. Henceforth I am a follower of Jehovah God. Let every man that thinks with me go now and fetch the idols of Aniwa, the gods which our fathers feared, and cast them down at Missy's feet. Let us burn and bury and destroy these things of wood and stone, and let us be taught by the Missy how to serve God who can hear, the Jehovah who gave us the well, and who will give us every other blessing. For he sent his son Jesus to die for us and bring us to heaven. This is what the Missy has been telling us every day since he landed on Aniwa. We laughed at him, but now we believe him. The Jehovah God has sent us rain from the earth. Why should he not also send us his son from heaven? Namaki stands up for Jehovah. Well, this address and the sinking of the well broke the back of heathenism on Aniwa. That very afternoon, the old chief and several of his people brought their idols and cast them down at my feet beside the door of our house. Oh, the intense excitement of the weeks that followed. Company after company came to the spot, loaded with their gods of wood and stone, and piled them up in heaps, amid the tears and sobs of some, and the shoutings of others, in which was heard the oft-repeated word, Jehovah! Jehovah! What could be burned, we cast into the flames. Other we buried in pits 12 or 15 feet deep, and some few, more likely than the rest, to feed or awaken superstition, we sank far out into the deep sea. Let no heathen eyes ever gaze on them again. One of the very first steps in Christian discipline to which they readily and almost unanimously took was the asking of God's blessing on every meal and praising the great Jehovah for their daily bread. Whosoever did not do so was regarded as a heathen. How many white heathens are there? The next step, and it was taken in a manner as if by some common consent that was not less surprising than joyful, was a form of family worship every morning and evening. Doubtless the prayers were often very strange and mixed up with many remaining superstitions, but they were prayers to the great Jehovah, the compassionate Father, the invisible one, no longer to gods of stone. Necessarily, these were the conspicuous features of our life as Christians in their midst. Morning and evening family prayer, grace at food, and hence, most naturally, their instinctive adoption and imitation of the same as the first outward tokens of Christian discipline. Every house in which there was not prayer to God in the family was known thereby to be heathen. This was a direct and practical evidence of the new religion. And so far as it goes, and that is very far indeed where there is any sincerity beneath it, the test was one about which there could be no mistake on either side. A third conspicuous feature stood out distinctly and at once, the change as to the Lord's Day. Village after village followed in this also the example of the mission house. All ordinary occupation ceased. Sabbath was spoken of as the day for Jehovah. Saturday came to be called Cooking Day, referring to the extra preparations for the coming day of rest and worship. They believed that it was Jehovah's will to keep the first day holy. The reverse was a distinctive mark of heathenism. The first traces of a new social order began to rise visibly on the delighted eye. The whole inhabitants, young and old, now attended school. three generations sometimes at the one copy or ABC book. The thefts, quarrels, crimes were settled now not by club law, but by fine or bonds or lash, as agreed upon by the chiefs and their people. Everything was rapidly and surely becoming new under the influence of the leaven of Jesus. Industry increased. Huts and plantations were safe. Formerly every man, in traveling, carried with him all his valuables. Now they were secure, left at home. Even a brood of fowls or a litter of pigs would be carried in bags on their person in heathen days. Hence at church we had sometimes lively episodes, the chirruping of chicks, the squealing of piggies, and the barking of puppies, one gaily responding to the other as we sang or prayed or preached the gospel. Being glad to see the natives there, even with all their belongings, we carefully refrained from finding fault. But the thread of devotion was sometimes apt to slip through one's fingers, especially when the conflict of the owner to silence a baby pig inspired the little wretch to drown everything in a long, sustained, and high-pitched scream. Well, the natives, finding this state of matters troublesome to themselves and disagreeable all around, called a general assembly, unanimously condemned dishonesty, agreed upon severe fines and punishments for every act of theft, and covenanted to stand by each other in putting it down. The chiefs, however, found this a long and difficult task, but they held at it under the inspiration of the gospel and prevailed. Even the trials and difficulties with which they met were overruled by God in assisting them to form, by the light of their own experience, a simple code of social laws, fitted to repress the crimes there prevailing and to encourage the virtues specially needing to be cultivated there. Heathen worship was gradually extinguished, and though no one was compelled to come to church, every person on Aniwa, without exception, became, ere many years, an avowed worshiper of Jehovah God. Again, O Galilean, thou hast conquered. Next time, the first book and the new eyes. That will be chapter 69. The first book and the new eyes. Well, thank you for listening. I do like hearing from you. Please contact me with questions and comments and whatever you want to say at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com. And while you're here, look around the site. I do believe you'll find much that will be beneficial to you besides this book. There are readings from great preachers like Spurgeon, stories from the persecuted church, Bible studies, and a lot more. Well, this is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.